Hello, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today's guest is Sheriff Ted Jackson. Sheriff Ted Jackson is the sheriff of Fulton County, Georgia. Good morning, Sheriff Jackson.
Good morning. Good morning, Ms. Butler. How are you this morning?
I'm doing good. I'm sorry about the mix-up.
Okay. We got it cleared up, so that's behind us now.
Okay. All right. Now, Sheriff Jackson, you've been sheriff a long time there in Fulton. What I call a long time, to me, it's a long time.
I agree with you. I became sheriff January 1st, 2009, so this is year number eight.
Year number eight. Okay, so you obviously are doing great things there because they keep reelecting you.
I hope so.
You hope so? Okay. All right. So, as you know, as a law enforcement and a sheriff, that there have been killings that have made the media, worldwide media, in the past year or two. What is your outlook on that? What is your opinion of the recent deaths of young black men and black women at the hands of law enforcement?
I think it's unfortunate that anyone is killed, no matter what. But I think you have to look at the background of law enforcement, and there are about 800,000 sworn officers in the United States. They have about 40 million contacts with the public, and a small percentage end up in excessive force. And we do have some officers, just like in any area of enterprise or business or anywhere you look, that shouldn't be on the force. And those that violate the law should be prosecuted for the fullest extent. But I think all of us should reevaluate and look at these killings and try to determine if procedures need to be changed. And speaking here in Georgia, we have training for excessive force, and it's required. And we have to learn to sometimes de-escalate rather than escalate. And no one wants to see anyone killed, but at the same time, we lose about 156 law enforcement officers each year. So far this year, we've lost 17 in the line of duty, so it's a little bit dangerous. Violence sometimes is overlooked. My philosophy is killing anyone is just wrong, period. And if the law enforcement engages in excessive force and violates the law, they should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. But here in Georgia now, in our county, we're working with the community to do a gun buyback, and we're trying to address the violence. There's just too many killings, period. And so we're looking at that picture as well, and we're trying to do our second gun buyback to get guns off the street because the killings are taking place younger and younger and younger.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. The killings that are taking place are younger and younger. In your opinion, is there more black-on-black killings than there are shootings by the police officers?
No doubt about it. As I mentioned before, 800,000 out of 40 million end up in excessive force, and a small percentage end up in deadly shootings, and some of the shootings aren't righteous. But on a daily basis, what I do is, because we run a jail that has a population of maybe 2,700, which is pretty large for Georgia, in the morning when I'm looking at the news, there is black-on-black crime. And when you look at the percentages, most of the killings are black-on-black crime. And the most attention is when the police officers engaged in activity that some people perceive as excessive force. And there are some cases, but the black-on-black crime is just getting outrageous. And here in Fulton County, we're trying to do something about it, working the community and law enforcement hand in hand, working to try to at least address the violence and get some of the guns off the street.
Yes, yes, I understand that. And so, in all your years of being a sheriff, you buying the guns back, trying to decrease violence, or decreasing violence within the community, those are great things. Those are not things to be taken lightly. So you're doing the whole community, the whole county, making it safer there for everyone.
And I'd like to talk about the issue you just brought up. We got to do more than talk about it. So when I became sheriff, the first thing we did was we looked inside the jail, and of 2,700 inmates, one-third are 17 to 24. And we looked at how we could make a difference and maybe change their lives and help them become productive citizens. So we did a GED program, and when you're in jail, you're awaiting trial, so we can't force anybody to do anything in a jail. It has to be on a voluntary basis, and we had 995 of the 2,700 inmates volunteer for the GED program, and we found that 65% read on a third to eighth grade level, which meant a GED program was going to be very difficult. The ones that we could enroll in the GED program, we do that, and we graduate about 25 every quarter. But then we started a pre-literacy program, and then we started talking to the inmates about, not about their charges, but how did they end up in the situation that they're in, and what could we learn from that? And the basic conversation was third to fourth grade. They fell behind. They never caught up. And then when they quit school, they had no education, no skills, and they ended up with crime being the only option they had. So that caused us to develop programs in the jail. We have a culinary program, a canine cellmate program. We have a program we call New Beginnings, where we talk to them about drug and alcohol addiction and bad behavior to try to help them so when they get out, they won't come back in. And then what we learned from that, we applied that to the community that wasn't involved yet in crime. And so we developed a youth intervention program, and we were featured. I don't know if you've ever heard of Beyond Scared Straight on A&E. We were featured on that program in 5 years, six sessions. And basically, it started from a mother calling in. She had a 14-year-old daughter, and she called in and said, "My daughter's out of control. I can't do anything with her. I'm going to drop her off at your office and let y'all work with her." And we didn't have a program, didn't believe her, and an hour later she dropped her off, and there we were with a 14-year-old trying to figure out how we could work with her. And then that continued, and so what we have is called a youth intervention program. The third Wednesday of every month, we have parents or guardians bring in 10 to 18-year-olds for us for the day. And we call it intervention because we're talking about education with these young people that talk about bad behavior, and some of them have good behavior, and we have the judge, the prosecutor, and the public defender work with us. And then we take them to the jail, and the inmates that I was telling you about, we let the inmates talk with them. And at the end of the day, we have them write an essay on what they've learned and how they change their lives, and this has a great impact. And in the 7 years we've done this program, we've had about 1,400 come through, and we've only lost two that had other issues we couldn't deal with. Some is called mental health. And then we decided, okay, we're doing this for behavior issues. What can we do for the good students as far as providing information? And so we developed a program 6 years ago called Helping Youth Prosper and Evolve, and it's a full-day workshop, and we tell them how to respond to the police. We tell them about not being involved in gangs and drugs, and we spent a full day with them. And then we decided that sometimes it's not the young people, it's the parents. So we have programs, and we invite the parents to come along, and we talk with the parents because the issues that we have are caused by poverty, parenting, a lack of education, and the environment. And so if we can address those issues with the community, and I said with the community, we have 65 chaplains that work with us, with young people and with homeless people. And our whole goal is to try to keep people out of jail and help them make good decisions if they come into contact with law enforcement.
I have studied about you, and even though I'm not a Fulton County, Georgia resident, so I'm a Northwest Florida resident, but you did great things. You were awarded, if I'm not mistaken, weren't you, from the president?
Yes. On two occasions, I was formerly with the FBI, and when I was in charge of the office in Cincinnati, I received an award of excellence from President Clinton. And then I came to Atlanta, and in 2002, I received an award of excellence from President Bush.
President Bush, oh, that's wonderful. Great, that's great. I mean, that must have been, were you surprised? I mean, to get that, did you expect it?
Well, you know, I guess I'm old school, and I just think when you're doing your job, you're just doing your job and you get satisfaction from the results. And when somebody recognizes and awards you, it is a surprise. Because people, society, if you know, you're in the journalism business, negative always sells, but positive, you get very little recognition. So when you get recognized for doing something positive, it is a surprise.
Yes, people seem to like bad news.
Yes.
So what is your opinion of Black Lives Matter?
You know, I think it brings recognition to issues, and anytime the public is uncomfortable about something, they need to speak up, and then when they speak up, we need to pay attention. Black lives matter, but all lives matter as well.
All lives matter. I agree with you. So, as Sheriff of Fulton County, you're saying that you have the gun buyback initiative. Has that been a success?
Well, we tried it. We have a Dr. R.L. White, was president of the NAACP for 17 years, and he's one of our chaplains. And 2 years ago, as part of our chaplain program, we have two chaplain programs, one at our jail with over 100 chaplains, and one we call part of our outreach program. And we have 65 in the outreach program. And we work together to reach the community with different initiatives. And Dr. White, 2 years ago, came up with a gun buyback. We had never done one before. And he went to Dallas, Texas, and used the example that they have there. And it was new. And you know that anything new is very difficult the first time. And this was January 2014. We all came together. We didn't know what to expect. It was winter, and it was a work day. And in the buyback, what we do in order to get guns off the street, we give amnesty. In other words, if you come up and you bring a gun, nobody's going to check you for a warrant or, arrest you, or we're going to let you bring the gun, and we pay you for it, and you walk away. Otherwise, if you don't have any credibility, people won't show up. And we had one of the local stations, 103.3, came out and spent the day with us live and continued through the day. When they first started, it was really slow, and we didn't expect, when things start off and they don't start off good, you expect the worst. But through their telecasting live, I think people bought into what we were doing. And by the end of the day, within a couple hours, we only raised $30,000, not expecting the turnout that we got. And we actually ran out of money and couldn't buy all the guns. So we learned from that there are a lot of people that have guns that want to get rid of them. And this had nothing to do with the Second Amendment. This is all about people that have guns in their possession and they want to get rid of them, because there are a lot of child deaths, a lot of accidents with grandparents and small kids and others. And when you see a child playing with a gun at 3 years old and kills himself, that gets a picture where we got to get the gun out of the house. There were no other options, so we gave them an option, and we collected almost 1,000 guns before we ran out of money. So this time, go ahead.
Okay. No, I said okay. I was just saying
okay.
That's good. That's great.
Yeah, and then nobody can ask us how many lives did you save. You don't know. That's not the issue. The issue is you have grandparents and other people with guns in their homes that want to get rid of them, and this is an opportunity, and we destroyed them all. So they didn't get back on the street. So we learned from that, and this year we're trying June 9th to raise $100,000 so that anybody that shows up with a gun, they won't leave with it, even though they're trying to get rid of it. And the surprising thing... And the surprising thing is we have young gang members that start to realize that they're not going anywhere in life by committing crimes and being gangsters, and some of them now are trying to get out of the gangs. We have some young former gang members, that are working with us because they have friends that want to get rid of guns and get out of the gangs that they're members of. So when you see that, that really brings a reward, because that maybe is a weapon that won't be used in a crime.
Great, that's wonderful. And you are right, there are a lot of deaths of children because of gun violence.
And this was a dream of Dr. White. Last year, turned over the reins to NAACP, so now he's doing this, and he started a group called SAVE. And you and I talked about violence before, and SAVE stands for Stop Atlanta Violence Effectively. So in addition to the gun buyback, we're also looking at trying to stop the violence. Unlike a lot of major cities, Atlanta, crime is not out of control. But when you see younger and younger defendants, you got to do something other than just stand back and talk. You got to get engaged and maybe try to change them and make them become positive. And, you know, some people think that might be ridiculous, but you have to try it. And you can't say it's out of control if you don't try to do anything about it.
Okay, that's right. That's right. It's like, it's kind of like voting. When you vote, when you don't vote, people have always told me, older people like my grandmother who's no longer living, that if you don't vote, don't complain.
And she couldn't have said it better. Yeah. And she couldn't have said it better. Because I know here a lot of people don't vote, and, you know, you try to engage them in a conversation, and all they say is, my vote doesn't matter, not realizing every vote counts.
Yes, every vote does count. So what do you think of the new Attorney General in Washington, D.C., that was appointed by President Obama, Ms. Loretta Lynch?
She sounds like a good choice, and you might not be aware, but her assistant Attorney General was the U.S. Attorney here in Atlanta. So we got to, well, she was U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Georgia, but was here in Atlanta, and I had a great opportunity to work with her when I was with the FBI, and also as sheriff, she was a big help. So that combination is going to be good for the country. You can tell that she's trying to do the right thing, and her history in New York can help the nation as far as making justice fair.
All right, that's great. So has crime been reduced over the last year or two in Fulton County, Georgia?
It's hard to tell. There are certain crimes that have gone down, but violence seems to be picking up a bit, and I can kind of measure that by our population at the jail. Last year, we only booked in, and I say only, still a lot. We booked in 28,000, but before that, we were booking in 40, 45,000. So that means that the quality of the arrest probably better, but certain crimes have gone down. But violent crime is, you know, even though it might not be rising, one violent crime, one killing is just something we shouldn't stand for. and we have about 350 of our inmates in jail awaiting murder trials. So, you know, crime can go down, but every time somebody's life is taken, it puts a different wrinkle into it.
Yes, yes, it does. So, Sheriff Ted Jackson, what is the Vine system? The Vine system.
I didn't get that. What is that again?
The Vine system. V-I-N-E system, the Vine system. Does that have anything to do with buying back guns?
Oh, you mean the buyback?
Vine. The Vine system.
Yeah,
V-I-N-E.
You know, you're going to have to help me out on that. I don't think I've heard
okay.
of that.
Okay. All right. It's here in your I was looking at your bio, and I'm not trying to embarrass you. That's the last thing I want to do.
You trust me. You'll never embarrass me.
About the Vine system. It doesn't say a whole lot about the Vine system. It just says that I guess it has to do with networking with the FBI maybe and different sheriffs and chief of police in different parts of Georgia perhaps.
Okay. Now, what that might mean is that what we try to do is work together in law enforcement. Is that what that is leaning toward?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I can address that. I haven't heard of Vine, but one thing we try to do in our county is in order to protect the citizens of the county, everybody's got to put their ego aside and work together. And so in February 2009, when I first became sheriff, I called all – we have 15 chiefs in our county. We have 14 municipalities and one unincorporated area of South Fulton where we had we have a police chief that reports to a county commissioner. All the others, the mayors appoint the chiefs. And we really didn't work together. And so the first meeting was the whole purpose of bringing all of local law enforcement together so that we could work together, address issues throughout the county. And then as it continued, we pulled in the state and local agency heads. And because of that system now, we have a deputy on the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force, a deputy on the Drug Czar's High Intensity Drug Trafficking Agency, which is HIDER, and we have three deputies with the Marshals Southeast Regional Task Force. And the whole purpose is that none of us alone can address crime the way we should, but if we all work together, we can do a better job. Yes, and we meet now every other month, and we talk about issues, and we talk about terrorism, violent crimes, drugs, and issues that we believe are a threat to the public safety of our citizens in the county, and we all work together. I've sworn in a lot of police officers. In Georgia, if you're a police officer in one municipality and you cross over into another one, there could be some liability. So what I've done is sworn in police officers as de facto deputy sheriffs so they can go anywhere the crime takes them and there'll be no liability on them. And so working together, crime doesn't get out of control when everybody's working together. And if crime is committed, we can all help each other out.
Now, the sheriff of Fulton County, Sheriff Jackson, people have called drugs crimes, nonviolent crimes. I'm not trying to put you on the spot because I would like for you to come back, you know, on my show. But what is your opinion on that about drug being nonviolent drug crimes?
Well, it depends on the degree. In our county, we're fortunate, and one of the things they're doing in Georgia is developing drug courts. In our county, we have courts not only for drugs, but for mental health, for veterans, and for cases that aren't really violent. Our philosophy has been that everybody doesn't belong in jail, and so if you can have treatment programs and alternatives, you can turn their lives around, and that saves the taxpayers money because in our jail, to house someone is $72 a day, so every person you can keep out is money that's saved. And so through the treatment programs, It's not treated as a violent offense, but if you're a major dealer, you got a problem. And I mentioned that we're part of the high-intensity drug trafficking agency with the Drug Czar's office, and the traffickers should be locked up. People that are using drugs are not a threat to society. We can work with them and change them around. And there was a story done here by one of the local channels. They found out we had some heroin addicts in our jail, and they asked if we would allow them to do an interview. And, of course, you know, the more public knowledge you have out, the better you can address problems. And the reporter did a real excellent job of interviewing the two heroin addicts that we were treating in the jail. We don't have a choice. We have to provide medical care and other issues for people that are locked up. But the thing that got me was both of these individuals said the best treatment they got from heroin was in the jail. But one of the things they overlooked, you know, they couldn't get any. So they had to accept the treatment, and it worked for them. And so building on that, we have a real serious heroin problem in the north part of the county, especially with young affluent students and adults. And so we're trying to develop a program to treat them rather than lock them up. If you're hooked on drugs and you're not a threat to society, I believe that, you know, everybody should have an opportunity to get treatment and turn their lives around. And it generally works, but, you know, there is a different public opinions on it. And I think people are starting to realize that you can't lock up and throw away the key and solve your problem. You got to do more than that.
Yes, because with the mental health, some of that could possibly be hereditary. And I think it's wonderful what you and the other people within the community, the chief of police, the mayor, pastors and things are great. But one thing that's really impressed me is that you have what you call treatment programs, and I believe this should be national. You have different courts. Is that what you were saying for mental health, people with mental health, veterans, and drug crime? You have three different courts. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, and the problem, I think, is they get arrested and then they get in the court. What we need to do is, and we're doing this in the county, doing a study, and in some areas of the country, they have diversion programs. Before you're arrested, the police officer can determine that you have a mental health issue or a drug issue, and rather than be arrested, they take you to a center. And we don't have that yet, but after you get arrested, you're interviewed by pretrial services, and they determine if drug court, mental health court, accountability court, or veterans court is the way to go. Now, if you still get incarcerated, we have a program in the jail. Emory University is one of the top universities here in not only the county but in the state, and we developed a partnership with them and gave them space in our jail to actually do counseling and medication for inmates that are seriously. We don't use mental health anymore. We call it behavior health now. That sounds a little better. But for those inmates that have the behavioral health problems, they medicate, treat them, and the whole goal is to try to either get them ready for trial, or if they can't be prepared for trial, to get them out of the jail environment and put them in a facility where they can get proper treatment. Before that, we were a pill factory. You know, we got a medical provider, and if you had a mental health issue, they would just medicate you. Counseling was very minimal, but now through that program, we have counseling and medication, and the inmates don't end up just staying in jail because they can't go to trial and they have behavioral health issues.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Those are great things. Really great. No wonder they've reelected you so many times. They know they have a great sheriff.
I appreciate that, but you know, one person can't do this by themselves, and we have a great staff. We have people that are, I would say, are activists that want to make a difference. And back in the day, you know, sheriffs and law enforcement, the key in society. Lock, you know, three strikes and out, you heard of that. The whole thing was to lock up people to solve our crime problem, and here it is years later, we realize it's a lot of money thrown away, and it's not really reducing crime, and it's not solving our crime problem, so we got to be innovative and come up with different ways to deal with it, and you have to have people buy into it. If people don't buy into it, it's not going to work.
All right, okay. So, well, those are great things. I'm going to get ready to end the show in a couple of minutes, but I just want to ask you one more question. Two more questions. Will you be running for election again for office?
This early voting started last week, and May 24th is the primary, and so I'm going to run I'm running for the third term because we haven't finished what we started, and you know, we didn't get into the sheriff's office when I came in, but we almost had to rebuild it from scratch in 2009, and there's still some issues we have to deal with, and I don't know how far you went back on the sheriff's office, but we were a disgrace not only to the state of Georgia, but you know, we had an international attention based on a shooting in a courthouse that we had to overcome. And so now we have visitors. Matter of fact, tomorrow we have students from Denmark. They come twice a year to visit with us, to visit the jail. We've had a number of programs recorded at the jail. We've had visitors from Europe, Southeast Asia, and South America come and visit our jail. So we've kind of turned a corner, and our employees are really proud that we're no longer the laughingstock, that people are actually coming to us like you to find out what we're doing and how they can use what we're doing. So it kind of makes you feel good.
Yes, sir. A lot of the things that you're talking about, in my opinion, should be nationwide. A lot of things that you are doing, I know all of those things are nationwide, and it should be. Because there's still Mental Health Awareness Month, May is. So
okay.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's all about the mentally ill and the veterans, and drug crimes having separate courts, separate judges, separate courts. Yeah, I agree with that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I want to add one thing too, if I can.
Yes, sir.
We believe that seniors are vulnerable, so what we do in our outreach program is we visit every senior center in the county, and when I can, I'll go out, and we want to make seniors aware of the crimes committed. And you talked about your grandmother, and you respected your grandmother. You didn't talk back to your grandmother. You didn't steal from your grandmother, and you never did anything to disrespect her. But we got a new generation now that not only don't respect anybody, they'll steal from their grandparents. They take advantage of seniors. So we think our job is to work with them and educate them and, you know, make them feel that we're here to protect and serve them. And one example I'll use, a few years ago, we had an eviction notice on a senior. Her name was Miss Hall. And
yes, sir.
Our deputies went out to evict her. We didn't know. They just went out to evict her. And I think we've created a culture that's really great when they got there. She was 103 years old, and she was bedridden, and her daughter was 84, and we went there to evict her, and the media was all over the place. We got set up. And so I think we have a culture in here where they knew that wasn't right, and they called, and we left. And what we found out later was her 69-year-old grandson took a mortgage out on the house 20 years before and never paid it. And we didn't know any of this. And because of our relationship with seniors, we did the right thing, and then we had an example of what we could talk about. And the latest scam is in visiting the senior centers that the IRS is calling them and telling them that, you know, they're going to take them to court and do different things. They threaten them, and some of the seniors get scared and they'll call and give their information. They ask for the Social Security number and identifying data so they can just take advantage of them. And I was out at a senior center last week, and I asked for a show of hands of the ones that have gotten calls they thought was from IRS and went along with it. And so we were able to not only tell them not to do that, but I got a call from IRS on my county phone, and it said that they were going to sue me, and to prevent the suit to call a certain number. Of course, we're going to investigate it, but I was able to play that for the seniors and ask how many got the call, and a lot of them got the call. So the point I'm making is we're working with seniors as well so they don't become victims of crimes. And I think that works as well because they trust us.
Yes, yeah, that's wrong to scam senior citizens like that, and it is illegal here in Florida too, and I assume in every state, even though Florida is the only state I've ever been a resident in. I've traveled and visited other places, but this area that I'm in, the panhandle of Florida, this is where I've been. I was born here.
Oh, so I think a Floridian, a real Floridian, all right.
Yes.
You didn't move from New York, okay.
No, but I love Atlanta, Georgia. Cannot afford it there. I check out the prices of houses, and I'm like, shoot. So I'm still here. But I also want to ask you one more question. Be safe, be seen, be safe. What is that program about?
Well, we have a lot of slogans here. If you see something, say something. Be seen, be safe is kind of the equivalent of, you know, don't walk up dark alleys. If you're shopping, make sure people can see you because criminals take advantage of you while you're shopping. They'll take advantage of you if you're by yourself. And if you're in darkened places where people can't see you, they'll take advantage of you. You should be aware there are cameras everywhere, and make sure that wherever you are, especially at night, that somebody can see you. And during the day, just be careful because our young people, they have no respect for themselves, so that you know they don't have respect for you. I saw one yesterday where two young men tried to carjack a young lady, and she beat them up. And the police said, yeah, that was great, but they wouldn't recommend you do that. You know, if you somebody puts a gun in your face, do what you can to survive. And generally, unless they just so vicious, if they put a gun on you and you comply, they're not going to pull the trigger.
Okay. All right. So, Sheriff Ted Jackson, I thank you for allowing me to interview on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I hope to have you back one day.
And I will, and I'll just tell you, you can't do anything to embarrass me. I've had all the embarrassment that anybody could have, so it doesn't bother me anymore.
I wasn't trying to embarrass you, sir.
No,
I have
that's
so much respect.
I'm just saying that because you said it. You don't have to worry about that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Sheriff Jackson. You're welcome back to the show.
No, thank you. And
maybe sometime in the future, ready to call you and request the interview.
Yeah, and feel free to do it at any time. And, you know, one thing is, you know, experiences we have here might be different than other places. And, you know, Georgia is a little different. And so any way I can help you, feel free to call me.
Yes, sir. I may be taking you up on that one day. I just may take you up on that. But Sheriff Jackson, thank you for being a guest on Show Talk with Angela Butler. And again, I just might take you up on that.
Okay.
But I'm going to have to end the show. And thank
okay.
you. Thank you for what you just said.
Yeah. And thank you. It was a pleasure.
Yes, sir. You have a good day.
You too. Bye.
All right. You are still listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am Angela Butler. I just wanted to say this. Last weekend, I had the opportunity to hear Dr. Alveda King speak. She has been a guest twice on Show Talk with Angela Butler, and she was in Panama City, Florida, and I got to see her and actually meet her instead of just interviewing her but she's doing some wonderful things. I enjoy hearing her talk. She's a great speaker. You know, so I just want to say thank you, Dr. Evita King, for giving tickets to me and allow me to bring my mother to hear you speak. For that was one of my Mother's Day gifts to her. So thank you again, Dr. Evita King. And you're welcome to come back on Show Talk with Angela Butler anytime you want. All right, everyone, have a safe day, a good day, and a blessed day.